It's not just about being strategic and how you're doing that in your content, but it's also about being authentic in it. If you want to earn trust, you need to put in the work to earn the trust.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan, founder and CEO of The Juice, and the host of today's episode, where I am thrilled to be joined by Shani Hamer, Director of Brand and Content Marketing at Crossbeam. Shani, I'm so excited for you to be joining us today. We are big fans of ecosystem-led growth. We're just kind of like tiptoeing our way into it and learning a lot along the way. And we're doing some things kind of very manual, but we've used Crossbeam and we've shared Crossbeam with a lot of other prospects, customers, and I'm always a big fan of how easy you all make it to do that. So excited to dig into all of that today. But before we do that, I'd love to just have you share a little bit about your background and your role at Crossbeam in your own words.
Yeah, great. Well, hello, and thank you for having me. As you said, I'm the director of brand and content marketing over there. So my team specifically handles pretty much all written content events, a little bit of customer education with the academy. As it is in a startup, we wear a lot of hats, and that I manage that team. I used to think that I was really unique in this, but actually the more and more people I talk to in this industry, the more I realize I'm not. But I actually, my background was originally in teaching. I was a teacher at the university level, got really sick of working in academia. And while I was putting myself through school, I did marketing freelance work for like 15 years. And so I eventually decided to commit to that fully. I started at Keyflow, which is a PRM software, moved over to Reveal in April. This April will be 2 years. So it's been a pretty wild ride. And now we are now Crossbeam. So it's very fast and furious, but I've really enjoyed every second of it.
It's fascinating. We find a tight correlation in the best marketers we work with at The Juice are not like traditionally trained marketers. Like it's a lot of teachers. It's a lot of journalists.
English nerds. Yeah. Literature nerds. Yeah.
I do think like you just have such a unique perspective of how to tell a story or ask the right question or ask the right follow-up question where like we in marketing, we're like, how do we get the conversion on this piece of content? I think sometimes like, I don't know, there's better ways and better perspectives to go into it with. So that's really fascinating. What did you teach?
I taught English, creative writing, literature,
cool,
a little bit of like rhetoric, that kind of stuff. But yeah. I loved it. It was great. But working in academia is really, really challenging in different ways. So yeah, I just decided I needed to do something a little different. And the partnerships tech industry seems to scratch a particular itch for me.
That's awesome. Love it. Yeah. We will dig into that. This is the Content Cocktail Hour, though. So we always like asking our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Well, I had a cocktail the other day that I had never had. I'm going to learn how to make it. It had mezcal, cucumber, lime, mango, and with a tahine rim. And it tasted like a beautiful summer day. Like that's the thing you want a day drink with. So,
yeah.
So I think that comes to mind right now.
If we were charting on this show, like what people are answering in this question specifically, I think mezcal would be very high on the like count. Yeah. It's not like the same mezcal drink over and over again. It's always a mezcal cocktail that has something. Mezcal and cucumber feels like a really interesting combination that I wouldn't have anticipated. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, though, because I feel like most people I talk to, they don't really like it because it is too smoky. I love smoky stuff. So like scotch, mezcal, I'm into that. So
that's fascinating. Yeah, I'm not a big scotch or mezcal fan because of the smokiness, but it has been a really popular answer amongst our guests. Maybe there's some correlation between mezcal and marketing.
Who knows? Maybe. We need to start that.
Yeah, there you go.
A mezcal marketing meetup.
There we go. Yeah, 3M. We wouldn't get copyrighted or anything there, I'm sure. Anyway, let's talk ecosystem-led growth. For those maybe uninitiated in what ELG is, I previewed it a little bit, but I'll share our own experience. I know we are just scratching the surface. You know, with Crossbeam, it's very easy for us to connect our pipeline and then go connect with prospects, partners, customers, and see where there's overlap in who we're talking to, who's customers of each other, and basically go to market together, coordinated, cross-sell, co-sell, whatever that may be, collaborate on content. But for those who are less familiar with ecosystem-led growth, do you want to just give the high-level overview on what it is and what it means?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think you covered most of it. I will say, I think more specifically, it's pairing with partners and being able to securely share data from each other's CRM to find those overlaps that you spoke to find common customers, to find an opportunity that for them that's a customer of yours and vice versa, to be able to really work together and look into your ecosystem insights, that intelligence that's there, those relationships that are already there, to have a much more targeted strategy, whether that is with marketing, with an outbound strategy, just being able to have that much more targeted and higher qualified leads from your partner CRM.
I think it's so cool. Like, I love that kind of reveal, no pun intended, of partnering with somebody new and seeing that overlap, because you guys kind of do it in a 2x2 matrix where it's like, oh, we've got 4 shared customers or something, or 4 shared prospects. I think like that aha moment is so very powerful. And that's where it's like, oh, this is a big opportunity for us. And I think really cool.
Yeah. And I think the thing that people should really know is that it, as you said, it's really a go-to-market strategy. It really touches every department within a company. And I think companies can really sort of rally around that in different ways. If they do have a substantial enough ecosystem, even like 10 partners, 5 to 10 partners, you can start there and just watch how that grows. And I think such a big part of that, outside of the data aspect of it, is that your partners have trust with your potential customers that you don't. And just being able to know that and understand what that relationship is, who the decision makers are, what their buying process looks like, having that kind of intelligence allows you to cater to the prospect or to the buyer in a way that really cuts through a lot of the noise that's happening right now, which is so powerful.
Yeah, that trust is something that I hadn't like had that perspective on. It's so important in today's world. I don't know, it sounds cliche to say, but like, you know, you hear the stats, like 95% of people aren't in market and they've done like 80% of their, they've sold to themselves, you know, 80% of the way there before they even talk to sales. And it's that trust is so important. Like, you have to build that trust through others, because a lot of times you aren't afforded the time or energy to build the trust yourself as a brand. So that's a really interesting perspective to have on that. Like, lean into where they, the people they already trust. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot over the last year and a half, 2 years, which is Americans are seeing like over 1,000 ads a day, typically. You know, like, we are being completely bombarded with information constantly. So we've watched the market really, I want to say, like, return to relationship. They're looking to people that they admire, people that have been to where they want to go, people that they know, people that they trust, for recommendations on products. And at the same time, there's so many different products, right? Every market is pretty competitive right now in the tech space. I think having that foot in the door by having that partnership and being able to understand ultimately too, like, what the buyer is struggling with, what they need, and being able to offer like a white glove service to them in this way is so important. And I mean, honestly, necessary if you're wanting to really grow in today's economy.
So you mentioned like, it's not just a, and I've referenced it a lot from a sales perspective and like how we think about it as a juice, but you mentioned it, it's like all go to market teams. I'm really curious, like, how does your product and ecosystem-led growth actually trickle into the marketing and content strategy that you're driving?
Yeah. So it's really interesting because I think people tend to think of partner marketing, like, it's almost like very square, right? They do these white paper, they do an infographic, they do like a help center article, they'll do an event, a webinar or something, and they check the list off with a partner, and then that's that, right? But actually, if we think of this as something that can be living in every aspect of go-to-market, then what happens with a content team is, like, I tell my team, we should never be publishing anything that doesn't have multiple voices in it. And those voices are chosen not by accident. They are chosen by the fact that we know our audiences overlap in a meaningful way. we want to make them famous. We want to show the relationship that we have there, not only because it's valuable to our readers and they're going to get something out of it, but because our audiences are going to benefit from whatever that relationship is. So I think that's just one small example of a way that you could do that. That is the way that I see it's really about highlighting those relationships, highlighting that person, their expertise, highlighting what that company is doing for others, and then being able to bridge and educate the audience a little bit between how that can work with what Crossbeam does and ELG, what the ELG strategy does.
I think that's such good advice for marketers. We at The Juice, we've always been reliant. We've got a user base and then we've got customers we sell to. I always sometimes remind people, we started with zero users, right? Like we had to get our first user. And that was a big part of our strategy early on was lean into the people that have bigger audiences, right? Collaborate on content. We're a content marketing company. Let's collaborate with brands that have the bigger audience. I think that's a great opportunity for marketers too, right? Like what's better than having one audience is sharing two audiences, right? And then even better if it's something that the sales team can collaborate on. And it builds that trust, right? That we were going back to again, between the two brands. And that relationship isn't something that like, you're not going to get from AI, right? That content's not going to be easy to duplicate or copy. It's just, it's very real and authentic. And I think that's a really good advice for me.
I'm glad you used that word. That's the word I was thinking of is authentic. Cause I think, yeah, it's so important. It's such a great strategy, what you were saying about, like, especially if you're starting out as a smaller company and you're trying to align yourself and the trust that a larger company has earned with the market, you are not going to be able to do that. If you do that in a kind of fake way, people are going to smell it from a mile away. If it's very clear that you are trying to profit from that relationship, people are going to know it. Their BS radars are going to go off, right? So I think being able to authentically engage with what that company is doing. So let's say I'm a brand new startup and I'm wanting to align myself with HubSpot, for example. Well, I'm a little teeny ant compared to HubSpot. If they're putting out reports and I'm doing actual really valuable tactical thought leadership and playbooks based off the things that they're finding in their own research, that's where you start to get attention of that audience and HubSpot itself, right? I think that's something too that is really important to call out is it's not just about being strategic and how you're doing that in your content, but it's also about being authentic in it. If you want to earn trust, you need to put in the work to earn the trust.
I love that. There's no shortcut to trust. Yeah. Does that change at all? Does that strategy from the content marketing perspective, does that change at all like how you're judging success with your content? Like we talk to a lot of marketers and it's sometimes it's pure brand, sometimes it's pure demand. Oftentimes it's a blend of the two. But as you think about the content you and your team are producing, like in this ecosystem-led growth model, like are you measuring success in a different way?
Yeah. So this is actually something we're thinking about a lot right now. Because for me, like SEO, pure volume to me is not important. And maybe people would argue with me on that, but I know it is important to get people onto your site and so on and so forth. But what are the quality of the people that those leads coming onto your site are, and are they actually walking away with anything really important? For me, I know that as a content marketer, my goal always, first and foremost, and I think that this is true for hopefully most content marketers, is that it's our job to earn trust in market at scale, that period. So if you are putting out BS content, trying to hit keywords and getting all this traffic to your site, but the reader's getting nothing out of it, you're getting crap leads from it, that kind of stuff, then is it worth it? I don't know. But if I'm doing a piece of content and I'm getting messages on LinkedIn, I'm seeing in Gong calls or whatever tool you use that they're mentioning content, oh, I loved that. If my AEs are so stoked about a new piece of content, like that to me is success because I know that people are actually getting some real authentic value from it.
That's awesome. I love that like success metric. I think that's really cool and really powerful. The job is to earn trust and market at scale. That's really powerful. As you think about creating content, if that is your success, like what you maybe personally like take pride in you're building, how are you deciding what content to create and with who in this ecosystem-led model?
Yeah, I think that this varies, obviously. That's sort of like my mantra as a content marketer, but there also has to be the results parts of it as well. We all need to keep our jobs.
And we all wrestle with that, right? Yeah. That's the name of the marketing game, right?
Yeah, like, we are talking a lot about like creating that engine from our efforts. Like, what does a very, very refined demand gen content marketing engine, what can that be for us right now? And that's something that we're tackling actively with our ops team. So these things are very much on my mind too. And I know they're on a lot of people's mind, but I think that deciding what kind of content to create is a mix of obviously like certain projects and goals that we have going on. Like, for example, did we just launch a new feature? Did we just launch a new integration with a partner? Is there something that's happening in the larger market that's like really kind of shaking things up? Can we help solve that issue? If so, how and who do we need to talk to make sure that we're developing content around that? But just from like a purely like partnership standpoint, I think that, you know, we're talking to a lot of sales leaders specifically right now. We have a very, very loyal following of partnerships people, and we will always make content for them. But we're also really curious about what revenue leaders need. And I think that the partnership sales dynamic has always been one that has been a little pretty strained, to say the least.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd say that how do you decide to make content? You need to listen to the person that you're hoping is going to buy your product, yeah, right? I mean, it sounds so simple and silly, but go out and talk to them and listen to them. And if somebody's already helping fix that, are they a partner of yours? And like, how can we use that information on something like Crossbeam to create a campaign around it?
I recently read a report that was about audience research, and they were saying one of their data points from the survey data they had was that customer conversations were the second most popular audience research tool, customer and prospect conversations. And the report was kind of like celebrating that, which I get, and I don't like discount the report at all. But I was kind of like, I don't know, to me, that's one spot too low. That should be number one, right? Like, whether it's through Gong or whether you're literally sitting down, there's nothing better than like hearing it directly from the customer or the prospect using the words that they use. Like, I think marketers, and I've made this mistake at previous career stops, we do not spend enough time in customer and prospect conversations. I think a lot of times we get it secondhand and we think that's good enough, but I think it should be like, that should be like, we should be spending a decent chunk of our time.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. What was number one out of curiosity?
I think it was just like, I'd have to go back and look, but it was like, just like broad, like internet research or something, or like maybe software tools or something. Like, it was fine. It was meh. I was just like, meh. I don't know.
Yeah.
Customer conversation should be number one.
Definitely should be number one. And I think, obviously, I understand the time constraints around that, but even if you can't talk to a customer a week, listen to a Gong call a week.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, have a very strong audit of your own LinkedIn. Who are the voices that are on there? What does your feed look like? Because that should look like all of the potential customers or the customers that you have and what they're talking about to you, instead of just this kind of echo chamber of certain things. Sorry, did you have something?
So I pulled up the report. The number one was website analytics, which I think is like, it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, where it's like you're optimizing for like conversion on your website or something. Like, that's like, and how many of those visitors that you're getting website analytics on are the actual people that you want to sell to anyway? Like, we're over-indexing there on website analytics because I think, one, it's easier. Two, like, we control it, and it's kind of the way we've always done things.
Well, yeah. I mean, marketers, they have always had an issue with things like attribution, being able to point to something and say, this is the impact that I have. I feel like that definitely has a place in your strategy. That data is super, super important. And you should actively be optimizing to try to make those conversions better, but not at the sacrifice of quality and not at the sacrifice of authenticity. And you can only really get that by thinking of the human beings that are reading your content and what they're dealing with in their jobs. And so, you know,
yeah,
it's a balance.
Go talk to the human beings. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Shawnee, I know, you mentioned this a little bit in your background. I just want to pivot here just for maybe one question, but you were at Reveal, kind of part of the Nearbound movement, and then now Reveal and Crossbeam merge, and now you're at Crossbeam going through ELG. So Maybe just like super high level. I think there's a lot of consolidation in the market right now. There's a lot of marketers either by choice going through transitions or their business is taking on different product lines, different brands, different companies. What advice do you have for maybe marketers who are going through that transition either as we move into 2025 or within 2025?
I think we're going to see a lot of it. I think we're already starting to see a lot of it. You see a lot of news of people merging or being acquired. I will say it's a little bit of the Wild West in some ways. During the Crossbeam and Reveal merger, I was very lucky to be able to fill Sean Blanda's position. He decided to move on and pursue his next adventure. So I moved essentially from a head of content position to a little bit higher up in leadership. And I think that that transition along with the merger really taught me about being in service to like really kind of having this sort of service mentality to your team and being very transparent and just saying there are going to be a lot of questions. There is going to be a lot of chaos. But if we know we want to do these two things, these three things this quarter, I can help you get there. I will find the resources to help you get there. The company will provide those resources and staying hyper, hyper focused on those things with the ability also to pivot at any point. Like it's a balance of that flexibility and that focus that I think gets you to a place where like right where we are now, which is like, okay, all right, we did that. That part was a little crazy. Now, how do we like buckle in and really start to refine some of these things, take a really close look at like, what are the best parts of both companies and how do we combine that into like a really beautiful, powerful strategy together? And I don't know if that really answers the question, but I think if, especially if you're in a leadership position, like make sure you're talking to your team, make sure you're talking to those humans, make sure they're okay. And make sure they know what the goal is for the next few weeks. And I think that if you focus on that, the rest sort of does fall into place.
I've heard somebody reference it. I wish I knew who, but I can't give them credit. Is rigid flexibility,
yeah,
which makes no sense when you say it out loud. But it's like within these guardrails, we're going to be really flexible. But like these guardrails are non-negotiables that we're not going to go outside of. And I think you're right. Like there's some discipline to keep it within the guardrails, but no, within those guardrails, it's going to be chaotic and we're going to have to be flexible and figure it out.
I was referencing more of the internal things that I think that you really need to focus on. But in terms of like marketing and communicating to your audience too, I think that being unified on the message that everybody needs to be in alignment about the message that you want to tell post-merger, post-acquisition. What are the goals? Has anything changed? Doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing if it's changed, but why is it better that it's changed? And then every single person in your company should be able to say the same thing with confidence, right? And having that kind of unified front, I think helps calm any nerves really that might come up for customers that have been with you for a while. And we are so lucky to have an amazing customer service team that has really made sure that that transition goes really smoothly for everybody. But also, it can generate a lot of excitement, right? Like it's exciting. A merger is exciting. And basically, it means that you have more resources, new perspectives, people are jazzed. Like that kind of energy is going to translate into things that the customer or the buyer is going to be really excited about too. So just really following that momentum a little bit, I think is really important.
That's really good. I love the alignment on the messaging, but like tactical enough that everybody in the team can mention it. I think sometimes like that gets lost of like, oh, we've got this big vision, but nobody knows how to like repeat it or talk about it, you know, on their own. Well, cool. This has been a ton of fun. Time's flying by here. Shani, we do always ask our guests to end with what's one unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
I feel like the AI thing, I'm not totally bought in on AI. Let's just put it that way. I don't know if it's going to do what we want it to do. I think it's a great tool for admin. I think it's a great tool for processes that take up time. But in terms of creating quality content, I don't think it's going to do what we want it to do. And I think we're going to see even more of what I was speaking to earlier, which is people are going to trust content and the content they're seeing less. And they're going to know if you used it. I know that it's really easy to tell now. It's probably going to get a little bit more difficult to be able to tell when people use AI. But I think that that general mistrust is going to get even bigger or higher, increase.
Yeah.
And that relationship and that trust part is going to be more important than ever because of that in marketing.
So good. I think it's an operational efficiency, not a creative efficiency. Yeah. And I think you're right that as even as AI increases its ability to sound more human, it's also going to increase the bar of skepticism that we have to surpass for our audience. They're just going to be more skeptical that as AI content gets better, they're going to assume more content is AI content. You're going to have to cross that bar if you really want to build that trust that we've spent so much time talking about today. So I really like that perspective.
Well, I don't know if it's popular. I'm sure a lot of product people might reach out to me like, what are you talking about? But I just am not totally bought in on the creative side of it. I actually read an article recently that somebody used AI to write self-publish a book about mushrooms, like harvesting mushrooms. And a couple of people died because it was incorrect. Like, you need the human in creating, like, you need it. We need to have it, not even just for quality, but just for accuracy also. So I think that we still need really great writers, really great content creators, thought leaders, and that's not going to be able to be replaced with the robots, unfortunately.
Love that. So good. Well, Shani, if the humans listening to this podcast want to learn more about Crossbeam or learn more from you, what's the best way to do that?
Just check out our new site. We actually just launched a beautiful new site, crossbeam.com. Lots of really interactive elements, or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to talk with y'all.
Love that. Well, Shani, thank you so much for joining us today. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining another episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.